Cool. Well, there's my friend Shirley. I was with Shirley in London and then Spain. Wow. Are you in LA or are you still in London? LA. Yeah, that's why. No, London? Jeez, must be late. Somewhere. Anyway, nice to see you. I had dinner with Shirley and her husband in London. It was really, really great. Okay, so here's a bunch of questions that came in. Gabriella. Hello, I'm curious about physical pain in lucid dreams. Okay, it's pain, but it's not physical. I've had a couple of dream scenarios where things have attacked me while I was lucid, and I feel actual physical pain, not a crippling pain, but enough to wonder about it inside the dream. I've read several books about dream yoga and lucid dreaming, yours being my favorite. Thank you for saying that. And I haven't read anything about this, though it stands to reason that it happens since we feel physical pleasure in a dream. I wonder if it has to do with emotional pain. Yeah, here's the thing, Gabrielle. This is so cool. Anything you feel in waking reality, so-called waking reality, you can feel in your dream. And I did an experiment with this probably 30 years ago when I was just trying to figure out through my lucid dreams, okay, I want to see outside of vision. And again, there's no eyes in there. This is the amazing thing. There's no dream body in there. There's no dream eyes. There's just awareness. It's just the power of habit. It creates the sense that there is a body and that that body can then feel pain, but there's no body in there. There just isn't. That's the amazing thing. There is no body in there. So I conjured up, I remember it very clearly. It was a lucid dream. I conjured up a rose bush and I remember it very clearly. I stuck my dream thumb. At that point, I didn't know better. I thought there was a dream thumb in there. There wasn't, and there isn't. I actually create the dream thumb in the act of perception. There's no dream thumb in there. So anyway, I created this dream thumb, didn't even know I was doing it by habit, stuck it in the dream rosebush thorn, and it hurt like a mofo. So it's not physical pain, it's the pain of the mind. It's habit. It's just simple, raw habit. So anything you feel and experience in the waking state, you can experience in the dream state, but there's literally no body in there to feel that pain. The pain is not physical because there's no physicality in there. Isn't that interesting? So if you have anything else on that, you're here listening, come on, we can talk. Okay, from Steve, I think I have some form of what's called aphantasia. Yes, I know a little bit about that. The inability to create visual images in the mind or difficulty doing so. Yes. And interestingly enough, people with aphantasia don't grieve like other people do, because they can't bring to mind, they can't visualize the person. How interesting is that? I think this may make it difficult to lucid dream. No. Oh, you asked me then, what do you think? No, it doesn't. It has no effect. And there's a paper on this. There's a by Whiteley. I can't remember. It's an open source. I can't remember where, but he writes extensively about this sort of thing. You absolutely positively can dream. You can have lucid dreams. Doesn't affect it. I cannot, for example, create a reality check in a dream since I don't see details. Well, you can do reality checks in a number of different ways. I never see my hands or any part of myself, for example. Well, this is interesting in relation to the earlier question, Steve. There are no hands in there. There is no part of you in there. This is one of the most amazing things you can study. It's called non-contextual realism. Thinking that there's something there that you kind of passively just perceive. No way. There are no dream hands in there. There is no dream body in there. It's just mind. And so if you have aphantasia, you can dream, you can lucid dream, and state checks can be conducted in a different way. Let me see here. The rest of it gets a little bit long. Yeah, I'm not able to put my look at my hands in a dream or put my fist through a wall. Yeah, I would recommend check. I can't remember his first name. Whiteley, Whiteley, I think. An interesting open source paper. You can probably Google it. He talks a lot about this. But it doesn't affect dreams or lucid dreams, at least to the very best of my understanding. Okay, from Mo, this is a tricky one. I'm curious about the nature of samaya and how to move on to study with another main teacher. whether that continues or constitutes a break of samaya. So I'll give you my run on this, Mo. If you're here, well, I would love to have you come on because this would really help if I could ask you some questions. So if you are here and want to raise your hand, it would really help if we had a little back and forth. If not, samaya, this is a there are a host of different vows in the Buddhist tradition, in the Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana. They all have their respective vows. The Hinayana has the precepts, and if you're a monk, the 240 vows. If you're a nun, it's crazy. They have like 100 more. I mean, like, go figure, right? Patriarchal BS. In the Mahayana, which transcends but includes the Hinayana, then you have all the Bodhisattva vows. In the Vajrayana, then you, which transcends but includes all both Mahayana and Hinayana, then you have the Tantric or Samaya vows. And all these vows, excuse me, interestingly enough, this is the genius of the wisdom traditions. They have all these, in my languaging, restraining orders, regulatory agencies, because until ego is transcended, it needs to be restrained. Think Putin, think, I mean, dictators, think just, out of control politicians. Until ego is transcended, it needs to be restrained. And so these vows are all about restraining, restraining, restraining. And fundamentally, what are they doing? They're reducing movement. Movement is the nature, movement is the fundamental generative agency behind ego structure. It's not, I think, therefore I am, Descartes. It's, I move, therefore I am. So all these vows, this is just to contextualize samaya, are basically designed to restrain movement. It's like a wisdom straitjacket that basically what? Funnels you into the present moment, which is the only thing that ever really exists. In fact, that doesn't even exist. It funnels you into the present moment provisionally, but even the present moment doesn't exist. When you funnel in completely, the present moment turns into the fourth moment, Turiya, which is beyond past, present, and future. So that's one thing to talk about. In terms of samaya, I need to ask you some questions because unless you've taken empowerment with this teacher, there are no samayas involved. Samaya takes place with empowerments. And then that therefore, oh gosh, there's so much to say here. Depending on where you go and who you talk to, whether it's Sarma or Nyingma, everybody has their views on this. Some of the tantras say there's 100,000 samayas that can be reduced to 28. They can be reduced further to 7 or 14, whatever. It varies dramatically in the traditions. And so fundamentally, the root samayas are all about, well, actually, I'll keep it specific with your the relationship to the teacher slash guru. Because if you get it, if I start riffing on the nature of samaya altogether, this is a whole big talk. If you have not had an empowerment, a wang, an abhisheka with this teacher, there's no samaya. So if you have had that, then the best thing to do is just respectfully, unless this teacher has been not like busted and isn't a real teacher, then I wouldn't do this with respect at all. But if it's a legitimate teacher that you felt like you needed to, move on to another. This happens all the time. Then the thing to do, if you can do it directly with him or her, is have a meeting with them, and just simply share. Just say, this is what's happening to me. This is what I want to do. This happens all the time, and it is unbelievably rare. In fact, if someone does kind of lose it, boy, you're definitely doing the right thing. Moving on. They will say, "Wonderful, I wish you the very best. Thank you for spending time in my store or whatever, right? Thank you for hanging out with me. Wish you all the best. Please continue." So the way to lead them is with respect. Don't talk ill of them. Treat them in retrospectively with a great deal of gratitude based on what you have learned. And so there's where I pause here because if your relationship wasn't that great, if this teacher is questionable, if they have not given you empowerment, then this just doesn't apply. So this is samaya is a little bit slippery to talk about, period. But without having a little bit of back and forth with you, I'm shooting a little bit from the hip. And so if you're here and can come on, that would super help. Okay. I mean, fundamentally, to show you how complex samaya is. Samaya is always broken, always repaired. if you don't see this world as perfectly pure, with like how many people here do that, you're breaking samaya if you're a tantrika. So we're always breaking samaya, we're always repairing it. When you're dealing with samaya of a teacher, a couple other things come into play. Okay, from Hannah. I recently had an unsought lucid dream. Okay, they just happened spontaneously, I assume. That's cool. In the dream, I was trying to pack a large amount of luggage in order to make a flight on time. Yeah, this is a super common sort of dream. I then decided, I really don't need this luggage. Good for you. And the dream was immediately replaced by a rush of energy that lasted a long time. Oh, that's really cool. Good for you. I have experienced an increase in energy in general since this dream. High five. Yeah, you don't need the luggage. Really, let it all go. I have not discerned what the luggage represented. Any suggestions on how I can find out what part of my life the luggage represented? I no idea. With all due respect, Hannah, I can't help you with this one. This would involve, I'd have to have the whole dream. Even if we had the time, here's a little bit the way I work with the whole dream interpretation thing. It is 1,000% valid. I still work with dream interpretation all the time. But in the world of dream yoga, dream interpretation doesn't exist. We're not interested in dream interpretation at the level of dream yoga. It's a little bit like during the day, when you're doing meditation, you are not interested in the contents of your mind in terms of what it represents and all that. That's what therapy is for. But in meditation, you're not interested in that. You're interested in changing your relationship to the contents of your mind. That's not to say the therapy isn't valid. Oh my gosh, it's totally valid. Same thing with the world of in dream yoga. Dream yoga has no interest in dream interpretation. But that doesn't mean dream interpretation isn't important. It is. It's great. But for me to try to tell you what the luggage represents, I have no idea. This is something, you know, probably the there's so many books on dream interpretation. One of my favorites is by Eugene Gendlin called Let Your Body Interpret Your Dreams. I might recommend looking that. I might also recommend, if you really want to do it, that you work with a depth psychologist, a Jungian, who works with dream interpretation. You can learn a lot about this sort of thing. But first of all, who am I, you know, I mean, to come in and say, you know, this is what this thing represents. The best I could do, even if I had the entire dream in front of me, would be to say, if this was my dream, this is what it may represent. So find a Jungian, find a depth psychologist, and look at Eugene Gendlin's book, Let Your Body Interpret Your Dreams. Okay, here's a nice long one from Eric. Eric, I'm just going to trim this down because this one's pretty long. Thank you for writing. Just a couple of things here. I consider myself fairly dedicated to my practice of meditation, dream yoga. However, I haven't truly been practicing lucid dreaming for the past several years. There was a time in my life I was thinking about becoming a monastic, but I still have attachments to my life. Who doesn't? I don't always have the time to meditate. You're not the only one. On a work day, when things work out, I can get 1 to 2 hours in. So here's the question. What would be your advice to your average layperson who is still quite dedicated but would like to advance their practice, given responsibilities, time constraints, about dream yoga? I was very happy to have read recently in your dream yoga book to essentially extend your meditation beyond just the cushion, which is essentially what I attempt to do with my Zen practice. I'm assuming this all-day mindfulness would be a game changer for a layperson. Yep. Well, this is a good question, Eric. And, you know, it's good news, bad news. I mean, one level, you want to learn how to play the piano. You got to put the time in. You want to learn how to play golf. You want to learn how to become accomplished in lucid dreaming, dream yoga. I wish there was a shortcut. I mean, there's a couple of things that maybe can help. But there is this cause-effect relationship. You get out of it what you put into it. Now, with that said, there are a couple of things you can do that will supercharge it. One is, this is just so tricky, you know, the shortcuts. One of the best things is what you seem to be intimating towards the end is really, there's so many more ways to meditate than just on the cushion, right? I mean, really, the point of meditation is not meditation. Meditation is remedial work. The point is to mix meditation with post-meditation, to mix meditation with life. So I would really work with the practice of illusory form. If you haven't read, of course, my books, Shameless Self-Promotion, Dreams of Light, The Profound Daytime Practice of Lucid Dreaming. The whole book is about the practice of illusory form. This is the main practice, actually. This dream yoga is a subset of illusory form. Illusory form is the main practice. And this is something, when you get the hang of it, you can do this all day long. That's the point. The point is to bring lucidity, awareness. Lucidity is a code word for awareness. The point is to bring lucidity, awareness to everything you do. Mindfulness definitely does that. Illusory form adds to that, amps it up a notch. So short of going into retreat and doing all the things that I write about in the Dream Yoga book, the practice of illusory form is really where you want to spend your time and attention, is really working with that, understanding the lucid nature of everything. And if you can also, you know, kind of rocket fuel it with a little bit of, if it speaks to you, devotion, compassion, these are the magic ingredients, that's some of the secret sauce. So that's the good news. The bad news is the physics behind it all, cause and effect. You get out of it what you put into it. So somewhere in there, Eric, is the way to play with this. But, you know, not too tight, not too loose. It's like Milarepa said, hasten slowly. I love this. Hasten slowly. Yeah, just keep going. The steadiness is the most important thing. Yeah, just keep going. Do retreats when you can. Read books when you can. Hang out with like-minded people when you can, like with nightclub community. And you'll naturally find the door of lucidity increasingly open. Okay, my friend? Something like that. All right. So here was another one that came in. Hold on. From Florian from Austria. Let me ask you the following question. Our dream circle is still pondering on this question. In case we experience a sudden death and don't recognize that we have just died, how can we find out that we are dead in a bardo state, given the possibility that we might be recreating our existence through the power of the unconscious mind and our old habits? What would be a way out of this mind trap? Yeah, good question, Florian. Well, most people won't recognize that they're dead when they're dead, just like most people won't recognize they're dreaming while they're dreaming. It's exactly the same phenomenology. And that's why death is called the dream at the end of time. So old habits die hard, and some of them don't die at all. Let me say that again. Old habits die hard, and some of them don't die at all. And one of them is this habit for habitation, the habit that you have a body. This is what's connected to the first two questions. The habit that you think you have a body is so powerful that in the dream state, when you're, you know, you think you got a hand and all this kind of thing, there's no body in there, literally, in both senses, no body and then no body, nothing, emptiness. It's exactly the same in the bardo. But the power of habit is so strong. These samskaras are so strong. It's literally called bhava samskara, the heaviest of all habits, that we just don't recognize. And so you can gain, it's like a pop quiz for the final exam. You want to see how you're going to do when you die? Again, good news or bad news? Look at your dreams. If you have lucidity, if you're aware, you're going to rock it in the bardos. It's the same thing. It's the same quality. If not, then your habits are going to take over. You're not going to realize you're dead when you're dead. Exactly the same way you're not going to realize that you're dreaming when you're dreaming every night. So, with that said, that's, again, is the good news, bad news. You can start to stuff the ballot box, so to speak. Start working with state checks, start working with dream signs. I do this all the time. There's a classic list, Jamgon Kolto Lodertai and His Treasury of Knowledge has a classic list of what are called death signs. These death signs are virtually identical with dream signs. And so I work with a couple of these all the time. And I would recommend, if you really want to do this and get into the habit of doing these state checks, is when you walk outside, see if you cast a shadow. Anytime there's any light, see if you cast a shadow. I do this all the time. Because in the bardo, just like in a dream, there's no external light source in there. So you don't cast a shadow. See if you reflect in a mirror. I mean, it's almost like a vampire thing, right? Some of this stuff is like so out there. See if you cast it, see if there's, you reflect in a mirror. See if you leave footsteps in sand or on snow or that sort of thing. And then fundamentally, really, in addition to that, just sensitize yourself as often as you possibly can to work with dream signs and conduct state checks. I mean, those of you who know me, I do this all the time. I mean, I'm involved in a podcast right now. If I hear something weird, you've seen me, I'll do this. I probably do a state check 20, 30 times a day because there's little weird anomalous dream type things happening all the time. And because I'm just, it's like saying Gesundheit, we're conditioned. When somebody sneezes, that's a good habit. I do this, I've done this so long, this habit now does me. And so, you know, I'm going to be okay. I think I'm going to be okay in the bardo. I might be surprised because I work with these dream signs, these death signs, and I conduct state checks all the time. But if you don't do these, again, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. This is just basic physics, causality, karma. I have this little plaque around the corner, Kabir, you know, the poet Kabir. What is found now is found then in relationship to life and death. What is not found now is not found then. And so continue to cultivate the habit to do the state checks, to look for dream signs, and become more and more and more sensitized to this. Because otherwise, hate to be the bearer of bad news, you won't recognize. Just look at your dreams. Okay, aren't you glad you asked? Okay. So now if anybody has a live question or a dead questions are welcome as well. More than welcome to come on. I'll check the chat column in the meantime. Okay. Oh, greetings from Roberta from Monterrey, Mexico. Hi, Roberta. Nice to meet you. Yeah, I missed you guys too, really. It's nice to be back. It is nice to be back. Hamish, you're in India. You're no longer in Israel. Oh my gosh. If it's a Hamish I'm thinking of. Okay, let me just look through here. Yeah, aphantasia is the inability to visualize. It's a condition that afflicts more people than we know, than you might be aware of. People just really have either a partial or very, very difficult time visualizing. So aphantasia can become a little bit interesting. And this is where we've had discussions on this platform, Hannah, in the past when people do or try to do what's called deity yoga or visualization practice in Tantra. It's a little bit different. It doesn't mean you can't do it. This is when you have to transfer from visualization to feelingization. But aphantasia is basically the inability to visualize. Okay. Oh, yeah, Alyssa got it. Good for you, Alyssa. Yeah, direct messages. Roberta, if you want me to ask, I don't have time to respond. Direct messages. If you want me to respond to the group, I can do it, but I can't type this in and kind of pull away from everybody. So ping me if you want me to address your question publicly. I can't address these things privately. Sorry. Okay. Can you make a clear distinction from between Hinayana and Mahayana? I'm trying to get very clear on this distinction, but Hinayana is it's a kind of pejorative term. Basically means narrow vehicle. Sometimes people, this is a dreadful translation, the lesser vehicle, right? Oh yes, I belong to the tradition of the lesser vehicle. I mean, give me a break. It's a horrible name. Hinayana, Mahayana. Hinayana is Theravada, one of the 18 schools that was extant at the time of the Buddha. Only one that still exists is Theravada, Mahayana. So there's a lot to say here. I recommend just briefly, Tim, Reggie's beautiful book. Indestructible Truth. He talks about this over 300 pages. But briefly, Hinayana is basically narrow vehicle. It basically means you're working on your own stuff, doing your own thing. There's a whole excuse me, kind of geographical array of countries that emphasize that. Mahayana transcends but includes Hinayana. And some, you know, some kind of conservative Theravadan people, when they look at Mahayana, let alone Vajrayana, they feel that those traditions have strayed. That's one of the differentiating factors. But Mahayana means great wide vehicle. This is where we take the vow, the Bodhisattva vow, that others are more important than you. The fruition, and again, these are gray zones, right? The fruition of the Theravada Hinayana is what's called Sosotarpa, individual liberation, arhatship, nirvana. In Mahayana Buddhism, they would consider that a bit selfish. But again, some of these are heuristic kind of teaching issues. Mahayana, the goal is to put others in front of you. Wider vehicle, more skillful means, introduction to the doctrine of emptiness, fundamentally brought about in the Mahayana tradition. So this is a really huge topic, Tim. I really strongly recommend you look at Reggie's beautiful book, what did I call it? Indestructible Truth. Okay. Oh, Rhonda, good for you. High five, Rhonda. Wow, you popped those up so fast. Thank you so much. This is awesome. She's a rock star. You're a rock star, Rhonda. Yeah, here they are. You cast no shadow. You see no reflection in a mirror. I mean, really, is this like a vampire or what? You leave no footprints in the sand. Your body makes no sound. People don't respond to you. See, this one doesn't work for me. Rhonda, number five doesn't work for me because people don't respond to me even now. So that death sign doesn't exist for me anymore. Ask any family member. You know, I'm completely ignored all the time. You can move through matter. You have miraculous power. You cannot see the sun or the moon. High five. Good for you, Rhonda. Spot on. Okay, I will get Roberta's question in just a second, but let's turn to Emily and get some of these live ones. Fire away, Emily. Nice to see you.
Hi, nice to see you. Just real quick, I'm starting to have some success with recognizing my dream signs and waking up for the first time in my dreams. So it's very exciting.
Wonderful.
My question is, you've talked several times about in the past about how meditation isn't supposed to be sedation, and that if you're just sitting there kind of zoned out, just feeling good, you know, you're not gaining insight and you're not furthering your practice. And so I do loving kindness, and I've been doing the mantra you taught us, the Om Mani Padme Hum, but sometimes I feel like if I'm just sitting and feeling the aliveness in my body, which feels so good, I'm like, well, I'm just zoning out. Now I'm stressing myself out that I'm not gaining insight. So could you talk to that a little bit?
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah, you know, that's my little critique. You mentioned this critique I have about mindfulness. Mindfulness is amazing, but it is limited. I mean, the mindfulness revolution is amazing. But mindfulness is tranquility, quiescence, stabilization. Mindfulness sedates. It does not liberate. The Buddha did not discover mindfulness. He inherited that. So it's wrong when people say the Buddha invented mindfulness. He did not. What the Buddha discovered is insight meditation, Vipassana. That's what liberates, see? So I just have this little critique about mindfulness. I endorse it, but I also criticize it, and also the mindfulness revolution. And, you know, when the world's on fire, chilling out's a good thing, but it's not going to wake you up. It's going to chill you out. So the other thing you're talking about is, I mean, you know, if you're feeling these beautiful qualities and you're feeling fully present and alive, you know, who am I to come in there and say, oh, you know, that's somehow deficient and you're not going to discover the nature of mind and reality from that? I'm not going to do that, right? So if you're having a sense of full embodiment, a sense of presence, a sense of awe and wonder, oh my gosh, just celebrate that. You know, really fundamentally, one of the best things we can do is just feel 100% wholeheartedly whatever is actually arising in our experience right here and right now. That in many ways is the essence of all meditation. If you're feeling what you just talked about, feel that 100%. That's actually going to be spiritual. If you're feeling almost what we might append anti-spiritual, we're feeling pain, we're feeling heartbreak, we're feeling whatever, feel that 100%. That's going to become spiritual. So the only thing I might say as a slight warning, and I'm big on this because I just wrote this article for Tricycle. It's going to come out in their, I think, fall issue. I've been riffing on this. You've heard me. You know, the two biggest problems with the spiritual path, right? Number one, the word spiritual. Number two, the word path. And the reason I say that is if you are simply 100% present with what's happening right now, that's it. All these other formal things, shamatha, quieting the mind, vipassana, insight, penetrating in, 100% valid. I mean, these are massive contributions. But again, the essence is those both lead to a full, complete presence and experience to whatever's happening. If you do that, it's like I write about in my book coming out in July this month or next month, is, you know, before you can become a Buddha, you have to become 100% human. You might discover then that being 100% human is to be the Buddha. So I would just use these particular skillful means that come from all the traditions as ways to cultivate what they're designed to cultivate. But in so-called post-meditation, so-called, you know, life, then the real practice is just being 100% with whatever you're feeling. So, you know, does that make sense? Does that land with you?
It does. Are there any particular Vipassana practices that you would recommend? Or, I mean, how do you, I guess that's probably a whole other conversation.
Yeah, Vipassana is a, you know, it's a massive multivalent term. It goes all the way from panoramic awareness to analytic meditation to insight into the nature of reality. So you're right. That is a really big topic. You know, the whole Vipassana tradition of, in particular, Joseph Goldstein, I really appreciate his work. He's written a lot about this, and I think his rendering from a Theravadan point of view is probably the best that's out there, in my humble estimation. Outside of that, then you have the whole Vipassana aspect of the Tibetan approach. So maybe with your kind permission, I'll table that one because that's another just really big, wonderful question, but I want to allow other people to come on. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Nice to see you, Emily.
Thank you.
Shariputra Premdas, how are you, my friend? Good to see you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I like the sir. I missed the sir part.
Glad you're back. Yeah. Hey. Question on the dream signs or the death signs. Do those death signs, are they limited to the painful bardo of dying or?
No. These are mostly karmic bardo of becoming.
Oh, okay. So you're even though you're in the karmic bardo of becoming, you're still thinking that you're living in your past.
That's the karmic bardo of becoming is dreams are the concordant experience of the karmic bardo of becoming. So this, everything I said applies to that bardo. That's when you're gonna transition out of this body into the subtle dream mental body. It's called manomaya. And just like in your nighttime dream, you're not going to realize you're dead, that you're dead, just the way you don't realize you're dreaming what you're dreaming. So that's karmic bardo of becoming.
But toward the end of the karmic bardo of becoming, do you at some point forget your past life just completely to where, because you got to now go into your next situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, that gets blown out. You know, the farther you go into the bardo of becoming, especially without lucidity, the more windy it gets, which means the karmic habit patterns there get stronger and stronger. And the more rebirth is driven by panic and fear because you can't handle the onslaught of your own mind. I mean, there's no bardo. Again, please understand this. There's no pre-existing bardo in there. There's nobody in there freaking you out. There's nobody in there waiting to terrify you. It's just your mind on steroids. By that, I mean, there's no body at all. So it's everything is heightened. And so the longer you go into the bardo without lucidity, the stronger the winds get, the stronger the patterns, habit patterns come into play. And basically, you take a body, you take a form, you make a bad choice out of fear, panic. I just want some ground. I can't handle all this space. Too much wind, too much space. And the panic itself will compel you, force you into making a less than auspicious choice. In fact, there's no choice. Your habits choose for you. Exactly like what happens in a nighttime dream. If you're not lucid in your dream, who chooses for you? Who decides? You don't. Your habits do. Mm-hmm. That's why famously, Trungpa Rinpoche, what is it that reincarnates? Your bad habits. Mm-hmm. So you only have, you know, you, this is why you want to, again, if possible, attain lucidity as soon as you can. And that bardo, before it gets a little windy.
So is the lucidity that we're trying to maintain in the dream yoga, is that the same lucidity?
Absolutely. It's the same mind. Yeah, it's the same mind. Yeah.
But then is it mind or is it actually
Sam.
Rigpa?
No, it's not Rigpa. No, if it was Rigpa, you would attain enlightenment in the Bardo Dharmata. There's no Rigpa function. Well, this, I have to put quotes on this because Rigpa is always present. Rigpa never turns off. But basically,
I don't have the awareness of it.
Correct. Awareness of it is lost. That's lost when you FedEx out of the Dharmata because it's too bright into the Bardo becoming, which is Sem. That's when Sem takes over. Namshe takes over. And Rigpa, I mean, you can always attain awakening through recognition at any point. You can always attain recognition. But what happens is it just gets too windy, it's just too much activity, too much movement. Mm-hmm. We lose the essence in the display. And the display in the Bardo Dharmata in the Bardo Becoming is massive, right? So you lose the essence because there's too much display. The essence was lost in the Bardo Dharmata. That's why you didn't recognize. That's what threw you into the Bardo Becoming. Make sense?
Yes. Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Nice to see you. Okay, Roberta, fire away.
Hi. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so glad I found this beautiful group. And yeah, it's so funny to listen to you live because I've listened to your books on audio. So it feels so freaky, but I'm so grateful to be here. I've experienced lucid dreaming since I was a child because I had night terrors. So this is my own translation of my experience. I believe my own psyche was trying to save me from the night terrors. So I developed the natural ability to realize that I was dreaming. Beautiful. to come out of the dream. I recently got your workbook because I wanted to get more into it, like to have more control of the lucid dreams when I'm in there, because I've awakened in my dreams, but I try to control things, but it's like I'm not controlling anything. Okay. But my question here today is mostly regarding if you could expand a little bit of levels of dreams. This is how I conceive it. So I'm in my dream. I wake up in my dream and it's like this nightmare. So I want to wake up. So I have this thing where I start like moving like this in my dream and I wake up, but I'm still in the dream. And then I wake up and I'm still in the dream. And like the longest layers I've had, it's like four. And then I actually wake up in this reality where we're all here now.
Yeah.
And it's not scary anymore because it has happened to me all my life, but it's not fun and I don't really enjoy it. So if you could share some light in how to manage this or your perspective on it.
Yeah. If I understand what you're saying, you're talking about, it seems to me you're talking about what I call false awakenings, recursive dreams, where you're dreaming, you wake up, you think you're awake, but you're still dreaming, right? Yeah, those are called false awakenings. I actually really love those things. I think they're so freaking cool. Because, you know, you think you're awake, you got it, you think you're awake, and then boom, something else happens. You go, my God, I'm still dreaming. Well, here's the kicker, Roberta. It's happening right now. You think you're awake in this reality. I don't really want to freak you out, but why not? You think you're awake in this reality, you're still dreaming. If you think this world is dualistic, you see me separate, world solid, lasting, and independent, these are the classic dream yoga dream signs. That means you're still dreaming. So we're always in a dream. This is super important. We are always in a dream. Dream is code language for manifestation of mind. There's nothing but a dream. And so when you die, where do you go? This answers that question. You just go from one dream to the next. So you basically assume, read my book, Dreams of Light. I riff a ton on this. We think we're awake in this world for all kinds of reasons, mostly fear-based, but we're actually asleep. So we're always in a dream. And so when you're having these recursive dreams, these false awakening dreams, I think these things are bloody awesome. And that's the way I would relate to them. Instead of like, oh, crap, it should be like, oh, wow. You know, the Sanskritists talk about chamatkara, this sense of wonderment and just amazement, like, wow, this is amazing. And so just go for the ride, you know, learn how to fly in space. You know, this is a chondro, a feminine dakini principle, one who can fly in space. And so when you're going through these things, it's a little bit like, I'm reminded of this beautiful quote from Trungpa Rinpoche, right? The master of the one-liner. You've heard this one. The bad news is you're falling through space without a parachute, right? The good news is there is no ground. We're always in free fall. So go for the ride, enjoy it, put your wings out, become a sky dancer, and then just learn how to fly in open space. And therefore, when the false awakenings take place, instead of freaking out, you're going to go, wow, this is really awesome. 1, 2, 3, 4 times I think I'm awake, but I'm still dreaming. How freaking cool is that? So I would just celebrate it. I really would. Because again, there's nothing inherently problematic with any of this. The nature of the mind is divine, it's pure, it's sacred. It really is. It's only when you relate to it inappropriately, you refer against it, you fight against it or whatever. That's the only way this stuff can become somewhat problematic. And that's due to what? Your inappropriate relationship to it. So if you just open, expand, celebrate, enjoy, realize it's just, you know, mind. In this case, you could say it is your mind. It's true. And your mind is good. It's just manifesting in this way. And then just enjoy it. Really. Just enjoy it. Don't try to control it. Just enjoy it. You may find it'll completely change the way you relate to this thing.
Thank you. I love that. And if I could just add, like, in the context of a nightmare,
in the context of a nightmare. So you mean you're having, say more about that. So you're waking up from one nightmare into another nightmare?
Usually my lucid dreaming gets activated because it's a nightmare. So I realize like this isn't true. I'm in a dream because this is bad. You know, this is not cool at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I try to wake up and I do the false awakenings things, but it's the nightmare still kind of continues because it's like I'm still in the dream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what you want to do there is, you know, this is actually quite an interesting comment. Anytime people wake themselves up from a nightmare, that's a moment of lucidity. Usually they wake up and they're back into this reality, but in your case, you're waking up into another reality. So what I would recommend is in my book, Dream Yoga, stage 4 is working with fear. Establish, again, if you understand the nature of your mind is divine, it's pure, it's good, it's sacred. And nightmares are basically undigested, unresolved processes of your psyche coming back in terms of integration. And you know, the nightmare is fundamentally wanting to be healed and whole. And so if you understand that, like a child, you know, having a tantrum, face the nightmare, do the opposite of what you would normally do, embrace it, love it. It's just your mind. There's no demonic figure in there. There's nothing in there that can hurt you. It's just your mind. It's undigested, metabolic, unmetabolized psychic residue. And so if you realize I'm going to metabolize this, I'm going to digest this, I'm going to work with this, turn around, you know, you wake up, stay in the dream, go into the nightmare, face it, embrace it, and welcome it. Just literally, whatever demonic figure is there, look it right in the eye, embrace it, and you'll find it's just your mind. There's nothing in there. Emptiness cannot harm emptiness. It's just your mind. And in that way, that residue will be processed, energy will be released, you'll be lighter, you'll be freer, and you may find your nightmares, your bad dreams slowly start to disappear. So if you do that, you know, listen to my friend Charlie Morley. He did a sweet TEDx talk, you'll find it, where he talks a little bit about this. And I think he closes his TEDx talk with this, his relationship to nightmares, where he engages in this sort of thing. So see if you can find that talk. He does a nice job with it. And also, if you want to really dive into it, my dear friend Claire Johnson, her book, The Art of Transforming Nightmares, is a wonderful book. Yeah, I highly recommend that. So if you really have some nightmare issues, which a lot of people do, she's a PhD psychologist, super great lucid dreamer, but also really strong in the basic psychological arena. I would really recommend that book, The Art of Transforming Nightmares. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome. Nice to have you with us. Hey, Kimberly, come on board, my dear. Nice to see you.
Me too. Very good to see you again. Okay, so yeah, everything you're saying is like crazy. So question, could it, like, I often wonder, could we actually be a so-called dead right now and in...
your question.
And not even realize. And it, definitely potential, but also because what you're mentioning is like a slippage through all the bardos in one moment that we can, we are in the bardo of becoming and we are doing a kind of a reincarnation process, I feel like. Absolutely. Here and now.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, until you become a Buddha, you're always in a bardo. And so it's exactly what you said. And, you know, in terms of the death thing, yeah, Kimberly, you're already dead. You're dead right now. I mean, look deep into, this is the good news, bad news thing. You know, look deep into the center of your centerless self and you'll find there's nothing there. You're already dead. So I understand. And I'll get back to you. I'll be a little bit more like relativistically practical. But our, by the way, our fear of death is, you've heard me say this, our fear of death is an inauthentic secondary fear thrown into the future of our inability to deal with the harsh truth of our inherent emptiness right now. We're already dead. We don't exist. We don't exist. You think you're having a dream? You think you're waking up in the morning? No, there's no such entity. But anyway, relativistically, yes, we have this consensual reality. It's actually a consensual hallucination is all it is. And within that consensual hallucination, we have certain parameters to dictate life and death. And so we're not all dead in that sense, because there is a relative level of stability and replicability here that you won't find in the bardo. So that's why on a relative level, no, you're still alive. On an absolute level, you're dead.
Yeah. So it's kind of like holding this kind of multiple, say even dual, but more than dual consciousness of, absolutely, you know, you in multiple dimensions in the one. Okay, so then we break all that apart to my next question is, you know, we have the three realms of Dharmakaya and Sambhogakaya and then Nomakaya. Where do the other six realms exist? Like the other hell and heaven realms.
Say again, I cut you off. Sorry, dear.
No. I was just gonna ask, are they within the Sambhogakaya or the Nomanakaya in cosmology?
No, it's all Nirmanakaya. You know, until you enter the pure lands, it's all Nirmanakaya. You know, it's all unified. And in terms of these realms, you know, where are they? You know, they're as much epistemological as they are ontological. I mean, they're states of mind as much as they are states of reality, right? But in terms of the kayas, they're all Nirmanakaya. It's just that when you go to like the highest of the God realms, it's just a penthouse of samsara. It's still within that reified dimension. It's just the best of the whole samsaric thing. The Sambhogakaya dimensions, and again, this is also gets a little bit tricky because on one level, the three kayas are always present right here and right now. So when we talk about the three kayas, these are wonderful, rich topics. We talk about them in a simultaneous fashion and also in an unfolding fashion. You're intimating the unfolding fashion, that out of the Dharmakaya arises the Sambhogakaya, out of that arises the Nirmanakaya. And that schema, then Sambhogakaya would be pure lands, etc. Nirmanakaya would be this. But, you know, if you look at the simultaneous expression of the kayas, they're always manifesting right here and right now. You're kind of breaking up.
Sorry, I was just saying, yes, exactly what you're saying. It just goes back to exactly. Yeah, it just goes back to what we were talking about before, basically, that it is all simultaneously happening.
Yes, again, you're breaking up a little bit. But if I'm hearing you properly, then I would have to say yes. Okay?
Okay.
All right, David, one last question for today, and then we'll be back. Far away. You got to unmute yourself. Unmute, please.
Thank you. So I decided to speak up because so many things you're talking about today are related. First off, you know, as you'll recall, I am the person that brought up aphantasia a lot. I have it, and I recently had an experience that of a very vivid, beyond visualization, which in this case, it was I was preparing to go to a Green Tara program, and it seemed like Green Tara visited me, and it was so vivid, and I wasn't sleeping, and I wasn't trying to visualize her. She just showed up.
Cool.
And and what she said was she wanted to give me something really wholesome to visualize as a feminine ideal.
Oh, no way. Oh, wow. How freaking awesome is that? So what did she give you?
She had sex with me.
Say, she had sex with you?
Yeah. And it was, you know, I can't even have sex in a dream because I always wake up. And this wasn't even a visualization. It was like, you know, I've had mystical experiences, and this was one of those. And it was so vivid. It was more vivid than actual sex. It was so incredibly wholesome. It was like this great gift from Tara. It was a lot of impetus to go ahead and do the Tara practice, because I was just being the sound and recording person for a Green Tara weekend, following that with Tukul Osel Dorje. Segueing in, it was a Vajrayana practice that he gave to everyone there and didn't require Samaya.
Yeah.
And I particularly asked him myself, you know, about what was going on there with that. And it was just something you didn't need to have someone as your Vajra master in order to practice. And it was created specifically for that. But it still was a full-scale a practice with all the stages except taking your Samaya. You know, it had the refuge and the Bodhisattva vow component of it, and all the other things of Vajrayana practice. So that was really interesting. And finally, I want to say, you know, it's really interesting that while, you know, we have the dreaming dream when we don't see our shadow or reflection, but this is the waking dream. Right. And it seems very interesting that we can see those things in this dream. There's something fundamentally different about the waking dream than the sleeping dream. And what would you say about that?
I wouldn't say there's something fundamentally different, David. I would say there's something different, but it's not fundamentally different.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, it basically has to do with the level of reification that takes place in this so-called dimension, which is the least open, the most contracted, the most reified, the most stable, at least in a relative sense, which is why we have science and all those sorts of things. One thing I definitely want to say is huge thank you for sharing what you did. That's an amazing story. And I love hearing this kind of stuff because it just speaks to the wonder, the miracle of this reality, and that we are not alone and we have capacities to interact with non-human intelligences that can really benefit us. And so for you to very generously share that is, just want to give you a big hug. I mean, really, really cool dream. It's not a dream, really, really cool experience. I mean,
I wasn't asleep. And I thought she was responding to a deep need in me. You know, as a typical male that we're so polluted and convoluted with the things that we think about each other. And here was just this experience of utter wholesomeness.
Yeah, fantastic.
It was so generous. It was such amazing love. It was like, wow, Kara could be so personal, and teaching something, and having this amazingly wonderful, pleasant experience. It was just,
yeah, it's a true empowerment, true Abhishekha transmission. And so, isn't it beautiful, David, that the more we open ourselves, the more we make ourselves available to these types of experiences, which can seem so esoteric, they're actually rather ordinary in an extraordinary kind of way. And the more we make ourselves open and available to them, the more we can have these types of marvelous experiences. But remember, of course, don't get attached to it, let it go, celebrate it. Don't try to reproduce it. And hopefully it'll, just whatever. Hopefully it'll just whatever. So anything else on that, David? Did I address what you wanted to address, or is there anything else hanging with that?
Well, having aphantasia, it was so amazing to have that kind of a vivid experience too.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives it all the more attraction, because then you know you weren't imagining it, visualizing it. I mean, it really was a true vision in the deepest sense of the word. So that makes it even more compelling and more powerful for you.
I had one once with three other people, and they all experienced the same visitation from Trunk Rinpoche and a horde of Werma who came down to a dead colleague that we were practicing a feast for just for the end of before his funeral that morning. Oh, cool. This late night. And it was, we all experienced it, and his wife downstairs experienced that something extraordinary was happening up there too, so much that she talked about me with me at the funeral even. Yes, these things, we can open up, these other worlds can open up if we're just ready for the prepared.
Yeah. I mean, we're interpenetrating with all these, I mean, Huxley talked about it, Blake talked about it, we're interpenetrating with all these dimensions of reality. And for those who aren't familiar with my Edge of Mind podcast platform, listen to the two conversations I had with Sean Esbjorn Hargens on exostudies. I don't know if you've listened to that yet, David.
No,
it's definitely worth listening to, because it just lends increased credibility to these types of experiences. I highly recommend it. So, hey, anyway, so great to be back with everybody. It's good to be back in the old USFA, largely so I can hang out with wonderful people like you. So if dedication of merit means anything to you, anything of value we've done here, we gather and we send it out to all sentient beings who might need it. And until then, we have dream sharing group on Saturday for those of you who are nightclub people. And then the usual events happen Monday with the meditation thing, if you're connected to that. Next week, I'm in Aspen starting on Thursday to do a 5-day dream yoga thing. So come on out. The place is jaw-dropping beautiful. So until then, great to see everybody. Hang with you in the near future. Pleasant dreams. Keep your minds and hearts open. And if you want to unmute and give this group little hug, hi bye thing at the end, we always do. This is kind of sweet. And until then.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Bye. A million bye, times everybody. More.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. 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 Thank you. Bye. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Great. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.